Today we're gonna wrap up this vision puzzle series, and Josiah asked me a little while ago if that's what I was doing, and then chastised me because we hadn't put the puzzle together. And I actually considered doing that, and I was actually thinking about doing it this morning, but I just flat ran out of time. It wouldn't take very long because, as you may remember from the very first time I opened that puzzle, it's still in big sections, but I think the visual, as fun as it would be, is not necessary. I think you all understand. You can picture a puzzle in your mind, so I'm not going to go into that. I am going to do a little review. If you remember, it was around the first of the year, I had given you all these, what I call vision surveys. And I asked you to give me and Craig and Buddy, as the spiritual leaders of the church, an idea of what you perceived, your own gifts and callings and passions and resources, as well as what the church had at its disposal collectively. And then to look even in the community and say, what do we see as opportunities and things that God may be doing in the community? And give us those so we can kind of see what the pieces are. I kind of view this as pieces, and that's where this whole vision puzzle series came from, is the idea of there are these little pieces that we've got. My passions, my desires, what the church has collectively, what the community has, what is God doing? And so, as I collected those, I had done one at the end of the year, and so mine was the first one in the box. And we had the box back there, and then gradually you began to get them filled out. Some of you were very prompt about it, and some of you took longer to kind of mull over it and kind of make sure you were thorough. And so we ended up with a whole bunch of these. I think there's 8 or 9 of them, which in a church with, I think there's 16 or 17 members, to get 9 back is a pretty good rate. But so we've got, I mean, look at this. We've got, I don't know whose this is, but there's writing all over it. And then there's others that have similar. And so we've got all these confusing pieces. Now, what have I done? Okay, so the idea is we're going to pray through this as leaders. Okay, here's what people have perceived God is doing in their own lives, in the life of the church, and the community. And as leaders now, we want to see, okay, God, what is the direction you are giving this church? You're the head, not us. God, Christ, you're the head of this church. What are you doing? How do these pieces fit together? And in the process of that, I asked Buddy and Craig, and he and I, we, the three of us, got together several times over the last few months, and we looked at these, and we prayed about them. And so the first time we got together, I did this. I made some notes. I read through these, and we said, okay, here's kind of what we're seeing. And then we got together again, and I made more notes. Mm-hmm. And then in the process of this, at some point in time, the social committee got together, and they made a calendar. And there were some things on this calendar that were kind of unusual. They weren't part of the normal thing. Potlucks are pretty normal, movie nights, we've started doing those. But there was, like, meeting, having a church service not in the building. What? Where's this coming from? Right? So there's these ideas that are coming at us. And so now we've got all these pieces. And if that puzzle wasn't assembled already in giant sections, I would dump that puzzle out and you'd see all these pieces. And that's kind of what we've got here. There's a whole bunch of pieces. Okay, Lord, how do these things fit together? How do we put these pieces together? You put these things here. Now, how do they fit together? And so we've spent the past few months looking at the Scriptures to understand what he intends. And Matthew 28:19-20, that's what Christ says he wants us to do. To make disciples, he says, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe whatsoever things I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. That's the big picture. That's all of these pieces have to fit into that mission, into the objective of making disciples. And so we began to sort through these pieces in various ways and try to see how they would fit together, all the time asking the Lord to guide us. Every time we got together, we prayed. And I trust that the church was praying as well with us in this. And the idea being, it's not something that we are doing. This is something Christ is doing. And we want to understand how He's doing it. And so now that we've kind of been through this series now for the last almost 4 months now, 3 full months we've been going through this, it's time to start putting it together. And I set a deadline a couple of weeks ago that this was going to be the day that I was going to kind of put this together and help us to see what Christ is calling us to do. And sometimes there can be this idea that, okay, when it's laid out for us, this is it, and this is what we're going to do, and nothing can change. And it's one thing about this church that I think we all recognize, things, we're very flexible. We're not so rigid that we can't change. And that's certainly the case with this. Anything that I say and present to you this morning is subject to change without notice, or at least with very short notice. We all know that. But nonetheless, I think it's helpful for us to have an idea of what Christ is doing. So I want to real quickly remind you of the four major sections of this puzzle, encouraging and strengthening believers. All of these things that we're doing together as a church will fit more than likely into one of these four categories, which all fit under the heading of making disciples. Now, I say that, but I also want to also emphasize that there may be other areas as well. These are just four areas that I picked out of the New Testament and said, okay, these are going to be major sections. So we've got encouraging, strengthening believers, building unity, developing active participation, and sound teaching. Those are the four major sections we say that are aspects of making disciples that we want to accomplish as a church. Now, one of the things that happens in a small church, especially a teeny tiny church like we are, is there's not always a lot of people that are outgoing and evangelistic, and so we're kind of forced oftentimes to do things that we're not comfortable with, right, Howard? Because there's no one else to do them. And I see that as a really good thing. I know some of you became part of Village Bible Church because of that. Because you wanted to be involved. The disadvantage of a large church is that it's easy to sit back and let someone else do the work. It's not to say that large churches all do that. Don't misunderstand me. Large churches can also have everyone involved, and they need to. But where we stand as a small church, everyone has to be involved as a matter of necessity. And so, as we continue to grow in our own lives and grow in number, that has to be our drive. And that's part of making disciples, is everyone being involved. And one of the things that I'm going to say later is that our job as a church is not just to make disciples, but to make disciples who make disciples. You that are teaching the kids, even the kids, you kids, look at me for a minute. Even you kids can be disciple makers. And the teachers need to recognize that these kids are disciple makers. Yes, you're teaching them valuable things they need to know. You're teaching them, you know, important aspects of Scripture. It's been really neat to watch as my kids have begun to understand Bible stories that 4 years ago they had no clue about. And that's exciting to me. And that's exciting certainly to a teacher who teaches that. But there's more to it than just teaching them those stories. They are disciple makers. We are disciple makers. And we are training disciple makers. That's the job of the church, is to train disciple makers. Now, one of the things that was on that vision survey was the idea of what you thought your gifts might be. And in Ephesians 4 and 1 Peter chapter 4, which is part of the reason I have my Bible open, it's not just to hold my notes. in Ephesians chapter 4 and 1 Peter 4, we learn that there are two major categories of gifts. And if we were to look at the human body as an example, we can see that there's the gift of equipping. Those are the gifts that serve, and we read that in Ephesians chapter 4. Those are the gifts that serve to provide the things the body needs. You know, if we were looking at the human body, the internal organs, the heart pumps the blood so that all the extremities can function, right? And there's also the gifts of serving, which would be the external, or the extremities, the hands and arms, those things. They function to provide for the body. Both are necessary. Neither one is more or less important. And when the body is lacking in one of those areas, it suffers, right? Now, one of the things that I wanted to ascertain in this vision survey was, what do people perceive their own gifts to be? Now, there's lots of tools out there that can help us find out what our spiritual gifts are. I mentioned them earlier in the series. And they're great. And it would, you know, it would be nice as leaders to have this inventory of what all the spiritual gifts were in the church. But I wasn't looking for that. I wasn't looking for that thorough thing. What I was looking for was, what do you perceive your own gifts and callings are? Because I want to hear what God is doing, or what you perceive God is doing in your own life. And so, as I went through these surveys, I kind of categorized them. And you may see some of yours on here, because this is what I did. I just went through it and I just said, okay, here's... Someone says, I have a desire, a passion, or a gift of discipleship and training. That's a gift for equipping. Certainly, obviously. Someone said, I have a passion to find resources to improve our Sunday school teaching. Obviously, a gift on the equipping side, right? Because we need that good teaching. We need those good resources. Leading people to Christ. Talking and sharing easily with people. That's a gift that can be used for equipping. That's a gift, by the way. A gift I sometimes wish I had. There was also the gift of discernment. Someone said they felt like they had spiritual wisdom and knowledge. Faith, at times. Encourager, which can also function as a gift of serving. But it's as much a gift of equipping. Right? Because we understand that we're going to be discouraged. And we need people in the church, and there are people in this church who have that encouragement, that the gift of encouragement, and they're able to say things and do things that encourage others. Playing instruments. Now, I put this one under a gift of equipping, as well as music and band and worship. Because this is very much an aspect of equipping the believers. And hearing the music and the rhythm and all those things, that's good, and that touches us in a way that other things can't. But what's really powerful is the words of these songs. Sherry spends a lot of time going through songs to try to get ones that tie in with the message. Because the words are very important. That's why there's always the controversy over, do we sing old songs or new songs? Because sometimes the new songs are kind of lackluster in their words, no matter how nice they sound. But the reality of it is, there's old songs that are kind of lackluster in their words too. We sing a lot of them at Christmas time. The words of the music are important. And so those who are leading in the music, whether they're singing or playing instruments, they are involved in equipping believers. Because as we sing these songs, we become exposed to doctrines that are very important. And they stick in our brains in ways that the words I say on Sunday morning escape. Does anyone remember what I preached on a year ago this time? I don't. Does anyone know the words of How Great Thou Art? Yeah. And there's powerful doctrine in those words. And so the gift of music is an important one for equipping the believers. Another one is leadership. I think that was the last one. Another is the gifts of serving. I'm trying to rush through these because there's a lot of material to cover, as you can see. A lot of material to cover this morning. The gifts of serving. In 1 Peter chapter 4, and these verses I do want to read, verses 10 and 11. He says, As each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace. Whoever speaks as one who speaks oracle of God, whoever serves as one who serves by the strength that God supplies, in order that in everything God may be glorified through Jesus Christ. To Him belong glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen. Now, in 1 Peter 4, it becomes more obvious the two sets of gifts, right? The speaking gifts, those ones for equipping, and the serving gifts. And as I was going through these surveys, I noticed it seemed like there was more that were in the serving aspect of things than there were in the equipping aspect. Empathy, which again could serve also for equipping. A desire to help people, obviously a serving gift. Now here's one. Love to cook, would love to have people in their home, which I would qualify as a hospitality gift. But this is an important one. We're going to come back to this later on in the message. But this gift of serving can be used in powerful ways. My wife is a good cook. She didn't put this one down, I don't think. No, in fact, I didn't get one from her.
Everyone knows.
But that's because I know her so well, I don't have to get one, right? No. She has used this gift many times in our married life. And actually, before we were married, too, as I recall, to have people into the home to minister to them, to get to know them. That's an important aspect of serving, an important aspect of the church. Highly observant, has a photographic memory. That can be a gift of serving, can it? Likes to play basketball. Likes to work on cars. Likes to restore things. Those are serving gifts. And God can use those in powerful ways. Serving others, obviously a gift of serving. Organizational skills. We saw that yesterday. We needed some organizational skills there yesterday. Seeing the practical side of situations, loving on people, helps and caring for people, graphic design, getting stuff done, protecting the pasture, undergirding. Let me explain that one a little bit. This is one of those ones that can fit on either side, serving or equipping. And a lot of these gifts, we can't just say, oh, it's only serving or it's only equipping. They kind of cross over. And this is one that can clearly cross over, because while it is the gift of serving, whether it's the pastor or somebody else, we all need that undergirding, that protection, if you will, from becoming so distracted by all the different things that need to be done. We all need that. And so it is, in a sense, a gift of serving someone else. But it also fits with the equipping, because if the pastor is running all over the place doing all kinds of stupid stuff, and no one's saying, hey, watch out for this, let me help you with this, the pastor can't do his job of equipping. Same thing with a teacher or anybody else who has those equipping gifts. We need people in the church who watch out for each other and say, hey, Craig, you're doing too much. Settle down. Hey, Phil, you're doing too much. Stop this. Let me help you with this. We need those people. And it fits under both serving and equipping for that reason. Horticulture. Now, these aren't highly spiritual gifts, are they? Horticulture? Working on stuff? But God can use these things in our lives. Outdoor design and construction. Troubleshooting and repairing things. Sound and safe setup. And the last one is one that we could certainly use, recording. God has put these pieces together and these gifts to function in the body for a reason. So the next question becomes, what do we do with these things? How do we plug these things in to the functioning of the body? Here's the gifts that you guys have observed and the passions and the callings you've observed in your own lives. The first thing we have to answer is, how do they fit within the church's objective? Which Christ gave us. We covered that. We've been covering that every Sunday for the last 3 months. Making disciples is the objective of the church. One of the things that is helpful to us is to understand our mission, right? Now, soldiers on the battlefield, they don't get every minute detail of what's going to happen in the battle. But they need to at least have a general objective, a general mission. Same thing is true of the church. We may not know every little detail, but we need to at least have a general direction. And we've already gotten that. So in some sense, as I present a mission statement, and I apologize, Craig, because I told him earlier this week I wasn't going to say anything about a mission statement. And so he kind of looked at it and said, yeah, it looks good. He didn't really think much about it because it wasn't going to be presented. But I am going to present something this morning. And again, not a fixed in stone, we can't change this, this is the way it has to be. But just to give us an idea of where we're going. The general mission is to make disciples. But we need to also understand, more specifically, on what battlefield are we sitting right now? In World War II, the mission was to defeat the Axis powers. But there were individual battlefields, and each one had its own objective, its own mission. And so, for us, a suggested mission statement, to equip Christians to be disciple makers first in the home and then in the church, such that they see their Lord change their community and the world with the power of the gospel through their own changed lives. Now, that you may say, well, that doesn't work in the home of the widow or the single person. It does. Because my life has to change first. And so our objective as a church is to equip Christians that their own lives would be changed in their own homes. And for us who have children still in the home, that our lives as a couple and our kids' lives would be changed, such that we impact the world around us. Someone may cry foul that there's a lack of evangelism mentioned in that. I mean, I got to be witnessing, we've got to lead people to Christ. Well, let me just remind you of the mission that Jesus gave us. There wasn't an explicit command to win people to Christ. It's implied in the teaching, in the making of disciples. It's an implied command. It doesn't need to be stated. Because that's what teaching is. Yes, it's teaching the kids Bible stories. It's teaching, you know, the story in Sunday school. That's part of it. But it's also teaching people who know nothing about Christ. So evangelism is included in this. Now, whereas a mission shapes what we will do, a vision shapes who we are, who we will become. With that in mind, let me suggest a vision for Village Bible Church. A vision to be a church where maturing Christians, influenced by example and teaching, new Christians to be active and obedient followers of Jesus Christ, so they mature as Christians and become disciple makers themselves. Now, inherent in this vision is a call to introduce new people to Christ and to teach them to follow Him, with an eye towards those folks doing the same thing as they mature. That means we can't count on a dynamic speaker or some great revival service or some other gimmick. It falls on our own shoulders. It falls on our own shoulders to be making new disciples. My guess is that probably most of us aren't real excited about that. It falls on me to go out to introduce new people to Christ, whether I know them or I don't. And the reality of it is, it does. It doesn't just fall on, you know, some great evangelist who might come to have a presentation. It doesn't just fall on a handful of people who are quote-unquote gifted in that area. It falls on every single believer to share our faith. So, what are we doing? In response to the questions on a survey that related to ministries and opportunities, there was a variety of answers, and I compiled them on a single sheet of paper. And this is one of the things that we did together in our first phases as the committee, or as deacons and pastor. Here's the information. Pulled it all out and said, okay, here's what people are seeing as opportunities that they're observing, either in their lives or in their church or in the community. And that they're kind of all over the board. So at first glance, they seem unrelated sometimes. But this is where we began to really assemble the pieces, if you will. As Craig and I met a couple weeks ago, I got pulled away and we weren't able to finish. But I said, okay, what we need to do is we need to look at these things and say, okay, when can we do them? How can we do them? Or do we do them? Is this what God is leading us to do? And so here's all the information. You see it on the screen behind me, jumbled up, kind of just pulled the pieces out, like throwing them on the table, like that. So as we began to look through these things, we can kind of pull out some broader categories. First one, monthly prayer meetings. I don't know if you've picked up on this, but I've been talking about this now for a long time. I've been encouraging you to pray in your own homes together. Well, it's time for us to start doing this together as a church. Which is why on April the 9th, second Thursday in April, we are going to meet together as a church to pray. God is going to do something as His people pray. So we must make that a priority. And there's some other things that will fit under this in a minute. Another major category is finding ways to reach out to neighbors, to befriend, and to earn the right to share Christ with them. And let me tell you that there's a whole lot of things that were suggested that fit under this category. Seminars, which we're already doing, evangelistic music.